Welcome to Above Valley Christian Church Podcast. We're about helping people find and follow Jesus. In this episode, you are listening to Steve McMillan share his message titled, When Love Walked Among Us, Grace Stoops. From the series titled, These Three Remain, this message was broadcast live July 16th, 2023.
It's good to be with you this morning, and especially to be back after spending 10 or 11 days in Israel with many of you. There are about, say, 33 of us on a trip to Israel, and oftentimes throughout the trip, I wish that everyone in this room could have been with us, because it was so impactful and so powerful. And one of the things about traveling to the country of Israel, among the geography and the history and all of the sights to see, is just the recognition that the story of Jesus changed the world, and that there are millions of people that make their journey to Israel every year, Christians who follow Jesus, not to go to a holy place, but to recognize and to honor the one who lived his life on earth in that part of the world. And so it was really a faith-affirming trip. And I hope that someday, I don't know when it would be, but I hope that those of you who weren't on the trip would be able to come. For those of you who are on the trip, I understand that your sleep schedule is a mess. And so if you need to sleep this morning, my mission is to keep you awake so that you get your clock back on track. And it reminded me just of how impactful Jesus is, that people would travel. There we are in front of the Temple Mount, just by the Mount of Olives, just giving a thumbs up to all of you. And what an impact it had. When you sometimes you wonder, does Jesus still making a difference in this world? You go on a trip like this and you realize that he is, that people are still following him from all parts of the world, all parts of the globe. There are followers of Jesus, and that Jesus is not just a historical figure, but he's actually still changing lives. And so while we were there, there were several in our church community that were baptized, in this case, in the Jordan River. And there's Jackie, and there's Amy. I won't show all the people that were baptized, but I like this picture of Maria. And hopefully you get a chance to visit with some of the people that were on the trip and learn more about how it went. Well, we're talking about love. And in this series called Faith, Hope, and Love in the year 2023 at Bow Valley Christian Church. And as we consider this summer, we're considering the idea of what love looks like. You know, we talk about love. Some of us write songs or poems about love. Our culture makes movies about love. We love ice cream. We love our spouses. We love our children. We love warm weather. We've been studying faith, hope, and love, and this fall we'll analyze the qualities of love as we'll work through 1 Corinthians 13. But for the summer, what we're going to do is recognize that love is not, first of all, an idea. Love is a person, and love walked among us. Do you want to know what love is? Watch Jesus. Do you want to know what it means to love? Watch Jesus live. Watch him die. He walked among us. And the beauty of Jesus is not just that he was a historical figure, but that he was love incarnate. You could replace the name Jesus in the Bible with the word love. Love was born in Bethlehem. Love healed lepers and made blind men see and caused the deaf to hear. Love was the greatest teacher ever. Love saved a man named Zacchaeus and another man named Bartimaeus. And love transformed a Samaritan woman at a well. Love was filled with compassion and fed 5,000 people and their families. Love calmed the raging sea. And love drove out demons from people's hearts. And love was betrayed. And love was rejected. And love was put in prison and tortured. And love faced the worst evil that humanity could throw at it. And love absorbed it and returned love. And love died for women and men. And love rose again. And so the story of Christianity, in some sense, is the story of love. How love walked among us. And I want to tell you one story today about what that looked like when love walked among us. And it's a story that you know, and we find it in John chapter 8. Here's how it goes. At dawn, Jesus appeared again in the temple courts where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group, and they said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing Jesus. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. And then they kept on questioning him. He straightened up and he said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." So this story has kind of three main characters. Let's think about them together. We'll start with the woman. She had to ask herself, I think, "How did I end up here?" We know that she was married because the Old Testament law that was mentioned specifically refers to a married woman or a married man. So at one time, she had been a young bride. Can you see her? She has dreams about what married life would be like. A husband who loved her. Maybe she had children, but things didn't turn out like she planned. She was disappointed in her marriage. Maybe it was her husband, maybe it was her, probably, as is often the case, it was both of them. Along the line, she met another man, and he noticed her, and he seemed to listen to the things she had to say, and she met a man who seemed to care, which was a powerful force in an aching heart. And at first, it was all quite innocent. And then she crossed the line. One day, they crossed it together. Maybe it was a touch that lingered too long, or a shared look, or sharing secrets that violated her husband's trust and confidence. But one day she crossed the line, but she didn't really notice it. The evil one has a way of making those moments dark and hazy so that we hardly are even aware that we're choosing. But we choose, and she chose. And then she crossed another line, and then a whole bunch of other lines, until eventually she was in a full-blown affair, and she entered spiritual despair. And she didn't even realize it. It was just like she had a secret and was living two different lives, two different worlds. When she was in one world, she could pretend that she wasn't in the other world. She kept herself from thinking about what this might be doing to her soul. But it was damaging her soul. And that's the thing. You could say that sin unchecked always leads to more sin. It always does. And the first time she slept with the man, she went to synagogue. She was sure that everyone would be able to see the guilt on her face, but nobody said anything. God didn't strike her dead. She vowed, "I'll never see him again." But there was no lightning. There was nobody that even noticed. Heaven was silent. And she went back to seeing him again. And then finally she could go to the synagogue and not think about him or think about God much at all. Didn't really notice what was happening inside of her. Until this day. And she's with this man. We don't know how many times before, but something happens on this day that's very different. There's a door that gets slammed open, and there's been men outside that have been watching. They've been waiting, and now they jump into the room and they seize her. And she screams and she begs for mercy. And she thinks to herself, "I would do anything to go back and have this not happen, to not cross those lines." But you can't ever. She would kill herself right then, if anyone would let her, but they don't let her, and she knows that she's as good as dead. They wrap her in a sheet, they drag her away, and just like happened at the very beginning in the fall, her eyes are opened and she's naked and she's ashamed and she wants to hide, but there's nowhere to hide. And they drag her. And she realizes how she got there. She chose it. It's not all it was with what happened, but she did choose it. She wasn't a victim. She made 1,000 choices that led her to this moment. And there she is. Can you see her? Thrown on the ground before Jesus with her secrets exposed and her shame overwhelming her. She's one character. The other is a group. It's a group of men. And they're the other reason that she's before Jesus. They're another set of characters. If you can picture the scene goes like this. Notice what it says. At dawn, Jesus appeared again in the temple courts. It says that Jesus sat down to teach them, to teach all of the people. In those days, the person who was the teacher would sit down. And when the teacher sat down, then you would know that teaching was about to start. I really like that arrangement. I think it's a good one. And it says that they were in the temple courts. Well, for some of us, those who went to Israel last week, we know exactly what that was like. In fact, this is the mount that he would have had to climb, the actual place where Jesus would have taken steps, that's Rose Kanibbe there, would have climbed up those steps to get to the place where this event happened. We know, and this is one of the places in Israel, we do know for sure that Jesus would have walked right up those steps. And when he got to the top of the Temple Mount, this is what it looks like today. There we are, just a week ago, exactly standing on the temple courts where Jesus would have been teaching. I'm sure the trees weren't quite like that, nor the ground, but that's the place where Jesus would have been teaching in the temple courts. And Jesus is teaching away early in the morning. He's sitting down. And the point that John wants us to catch here is that the men are dragging this woman into a public setting. These men are more than willing to humiliate this woman publicly because, frankly, it's not her that they care about. It's Jesus that they're trying to trap. So she's hardly a person to them. And this is what they say. They say, "Teacher, this woman was caught." And the law said they actually had to be caught. In other words, caught in the act. It wasn't enough just to have hearsay. It wasn't enough just to be near the building. It wasn't enough just to see someone enter that shouldn't enter. You had to actually see them in the act. And they think to themselves, we've got Jesus now. We've got a trap because she was caught. And sure enough, the Old Testament does say that if a woman is caught or a man is caught, you ever wonder where the man was in this story? In the act of adultery, that they were to stone such women. Now, they think they've got Jesus because here's Jesus preaching love, preaching compassion. If he shows mercy to this woman and lets her go, then basically he's going against the law of Moses. And they think, well, if he does that, then we've got him. He can no longer be a teacher for the people. If on the other hand, he says stone her, not only will the crowd not forgive him, but it also goes against the law of the Romans, because the Romans basically said Jews could not execute people on their own. That's why Jesus, when he went to trial, had to come before the Roman governor. So the Jews weren't allowed to execute anybody. So they got Jesus, they think. They got him in this trap. They got him in the sandwich. He can't get out of this one. It's a tricky position. So here's this woman. Do you see her? She's trembling with guilt and with fear. She's wishing that she could die. In fact, she thinks she's about to die. And these men don't even see her. They don't care about her. All they can think is, we've got Jesus now. And there they stand with stones in their hands. And they're ready. Now, this might be a good place in this story to pause and ask this question. Have you ever had stones in your hands? It's a strange thing that can happen to a heart that starts out tender. I wonder if for these teachers of the law, these men, if when they first signed on to follow the law and to become teachers of the law, they were going to devote themselves to service to God. And I'm guessing that at some point their hearts were soft towards God and other people. And they were motivated, I think, probably at some point by love. But something happened over time. Over time, something took place. I know this. Oftentimes something bad creeps in the midst of or through something good. And so they're learning all about scriptures and they're learning all about the law. But the more that they learn, the more that they get filled with pride about how much that they learn. And the more that they're gifted, the more that they recognize that other people aren't, and it fills them with impatience about other people and then even contempt with other people because they're weaker. I'll tell you this. I've picked up a few of these. I know this in my heart. Here's what I've found. For many years, I kept taking, degrees and classes and education and all of these things, scriptures, apologetics. And what I discovered is that it's a lot easier to train my mind academically than it is to broaden my heart with compassion. In fact, there almost seems to be a way in which the more that I learn, the harder it is for me not to pick up stones. So these men, they got stones in their hands, and they're enslaved by their cold hearts as much as any addict is enslaved by a drug. And what's taking place in this moment is very interesting. Now, early Christians kind of divided up sin into two ways, two categories. And they called, on one hand, they said there were sins of the flesh. Okay, and sins of the flesh had to do with appetites that we have that are out of control. Lust, greed, gluttony, drunkenness. So for us, alcohol, drugs, pornography, Krispy Kreme donuts, BMWs, multiple televisions, whatever it is. These are the sins of the flesh. And so they said those were definitely a part of following Jesus. You struggled with the sins of the flesh, but there were also the sins of the spirit. And the sins of the spirit had less to do with biology, and they had more to do with the soul. And those were the sins of pride and arrogance and self-righteousness and judgment. And so early Christians recognized that both were at work inside of people. And I think you could almost put it this way. Most of the time, you and I are more scandalized by sins of the flesh, right? That's what we like to talk about. But Jesus was more scandalized by sins of the spirit. And what's so dangerous about sins of the spirit is that when these come in, when we judge people, the pride, sort of the moral superiority, when we feel that towards somebody else, it kind of gets a hold of us. And when it gets a hold of us, we don't even recognize that it's there. You just walk through life with a stone in your hand. And you have these mental thoughts, kind of like these mental attitudes. And it comes out in cutting words. And it comes out in bitterness. And it comes out in resentment. And it comes out where you look at people and you don't feel love, or something happens and you don't seem to have any ability to have compassion. And you don't even notice the hurting people around you. You just see them and you're not moved. God help us. I know this. If there's somebody that I feel jealous of, or I think that they've gone farther than me or achieved more than me, and then I hear something that might be bad about them, that they might fall when I'm left standing, I pick up a stone. God help me. I pick up stones. So we have the woman, we have this man, men, and we have Jesus. And so if you can see the woman and you can see the men, now see Jesus. Jesus and this woman, she's staring at the ground. Her sweaty hair is dangling. Her tears are dripping hot with hurt. Her lips are tight. Her jaw is clenched. She has no exit. She can't deny the accusation. She had been caught. She would love to plead for mercy, but to who? All she knew was accusation. There was nobody there to speak for her. But get this. This is so good. There is somebody there. That would stoop for her. That would stoop for her. This strange man, Jesus. The woman staring at the ground. And Jesus, it says in this verse, he says again, he stooped down and wrote in the dust. You would expect him to stand up and ascend the stairs and speak. But instead, he leans over. He descends lower than anyone else. He descends lower than the priests. He descends lower than the people. He descends lower than the teachers of the law. He descends even lower than the woman. This is his way.
He's prone to stoop,
this Jesus.
He stoops to wash feet. He stoops to embrace children. He stoops to pull Peter out of the water. He stoops to pray in the garden. He stoops before the Roman whipping post. He stoops to carry his cross. Grace stoops. And in this story, he stoops and he writes in the sand. Well, what does he write? I don't know. Nobody knows. I wonder if it's maybe the first act of compassion. Because what's everybody been looking at up until this point? They've been looking at this woman, this scantily clad, humiliated woman in the center of the circle. And now he stoops and they all start looking at him and what they're writing. And the text says that they kept demanding an answer, the men. Tell us, what do you think? What should we do with this lady? And Jesus says these words. He says, well, go ahead. Stone her. That's what the law says. Stone her. And then he says this, just one rule. Let the one without sin go first. So basically, go ahead, throw the stone if you want to. Pass judgment, condemn her. Just make sure that you're sinless yourself. Just make sure you remember that sinful people, fallen people, are really in no position to throw stones. Because sinful people start passing judgment, they end up passing judgment on themselves before a sinless, holy God. To me, this is a fascinating story because at this moment in the story, they could only see her sin. They could only see her sin, but they couldn't see their own sin. And this is the truth about all of us, isn't it? It's easy to see the truth about other people and what they need to change, isn't it? I got a friend who says, you know, it's so easy to be objective about other people's lives. So easy. The truth that I can't see is the truth about me. And they can't see it until Jesus writes in the sand and the truth about themselves is revealed. In other words, if you don't name your sin, Jesus will sometimes just name it for you. And what do they recognize? They recognize, hey, we're not who we thought we were. We're not the champions for God. We're not the fighters for morality. We're an arrogant little circle of stone throwers. And when the accusers heard this, it says, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest. Maybe the oldest were quick to clue in that they hadn't won this round with Jesus. And Jesus begins writing in the sand again. And the young look to the old, and the old look inside themselves. And they're the first ones to drop their stones. And as they turn to leave, the young ones borrow their convictions and do the same. And the only sound that you could hear in that moment is the thud of stones. Let me pause again. Anybody here need to let go of some stones today? Maybe you're carrying one today against your parents. And you cannot help but see all the things that they have done wrong, and you're happy to point them out. Or maybe it's an ex-spouse, or maybe it's a spouse, or maybe it's a boss, maybe it's a coworker. It's somebody that really hurt you. Somebody that did something that was not right. And so as soon as they did something that was not right, you picked up the stone. And you were ready. You're ready. Or maybe you didn't feel good about yourself, and the moment you don't feel good about yourself, you pick up a stone, because if you can throw a stone, that helps you feel good about yourself. I don't know. Maybe you've been carrying your stone around so long towards somebody, you don't even know that you're carrying it. But this could be the day. This could be the day when you set your stone down. Because the truth is that in a church family, we don't really have room for stone throwers. We're all too messed up. Somebody say amen to that. Thank you. We're a family. We're not a corporation. We're not a courtroom. Back to the story. Now, to me, my favorite moment in this story. there's Jesus, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Can you see it? The sinless one, woman caught in the act. Couldn't be more of a contrast. And so it's just Jesus and her. And in that moment, I would suggest to you that she saw something that she had never seen before. She looked and she saw a sight that would have taken her breath away. She saw sinless eyes. A man seeing her without the stain of sin in him. No lust, no selfish intent, no secret agenda, just pure, complete love. When love walked among us, it looked at a woman caught in adultery. And Jesus stands up and he asks her some amazing questions. First of all, he calls her by a tender word, "Woman, where are your accusers?" In other words, he's getting her. She's been filled with shame. He's saying, "Where are your accusers? What does she have to do?" She has to lift her eyes. And she has to look and see. Where are they? He says, "Is no one here to condemn you?" You got to know that love smiled when she raised her head. And she saw no one. All that she saw was rocks on the ground. And then she thinks to herself, "But there's still one. There's still one who could condemn me. What does he want? What is he going to do?" She turns to him. She says, "No one's left." And then she uses the word "Lord." She says, "No one, Lord." And he turns to her and he says something that's right at the very heart of the gospel. Friends, you've got to hear this. He says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin." Well, how could he say that? How could he say he doesn't condemn her? She did something that was very, very wrong. And the answer is right at the essence of Christianity. It's right at the center of it. This is the paradox and beauty and genius of Christianity. He should have said, "You're guilty." He should have said, "You're guilty, therefore I condemn you." That's what he should have said. Or if he didn't think she was guilty, he should have just brushed over her immorality and said, "You're not guilty, therefore I don't condemn you." But what does he say? He says, "You are guilty. We both know it. And I don't condemn you." How could he do that? How could he hold these two things together? Because either for us, most of us feel like we either have to be moral or we have to be gracious. We either have to hold a hard line about what's right and wrong, or we have to just ignore what's right and wrong and just be gracious. We often feel like we can't be both, but love can. Oftentimes it feels like either we're going to trample on people or we're going to trample on morality and what the law says and what's right and wrong. But Jesus comes along and says, "No, no, 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 no." What's going on in his mind? Well, there's one place where we get an idea. It's actually from a movie that tries to illustrate this. Most movies about Jesus I'm not a real big fan of, but there is one movie, The Greatest Story Ever Told. Some of you have seen this. And there's a great picture of this when he comes to this part of the story of Jesus. And when they write this movie, when they portray this movie, there's this moment where Jesus says, "Go ahead, stone her." And the woman is in front of him. And what does he do? He picks up the rock. And then he goes, and then he says, "Who's ever without sin? Go ahead, cast the first stone." And he picks up the rock and he just walks around the circle. And he says, "You? You? You without sin? You? You?" Puts in front of everyone. "Go ahead, who wants it? Whoever's out there, who wants it? Whoever's without a sin, go ahead and cast the first stone." And in the end, of course, he goes around to all of the circle and nobody, you know, everybody's like, "Ooh." Nobody takes it. But this is what happens in this story, in the movie. You can watch it later. He takes it. He doesn't lay it down. He doesn't just drop it. He casts the stone down. Why? Because who's the one that is literally without sin that is able to cast the first stone? Jesus is. Right? He's the one. And he's not just without sin as far as adultery goes. He's without sin at all. So he's the only person on the face of the earth who really has the right to cast a stone. But what does he do? Where does he cast it? He doesn't cast it at the woman. He doesn't cast it at the men, although why not? And he doesn't cast it away. Like you can't just throw, the debt has to be paid. Forgiveness doesn't mean, oh, just forget it. Somebody will get it. It doesn't just go into thin air. In the movie, what he does is he casts it at his feet. Basically, he goes like this at himself. It's fascinating. What is he saying? What is he saying to this woman? What is he saying into this movie? I don't condemn you. Why? Because I will be condemned for you. Here in John, it says, neither do I condemn you. But in Mark chapter 10, Jesus says, the Son of Man will be betrayed and they will condemn him. And that's why Romans chapter 8 can say that there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. This is the Christian life, friends. This is it. Every other religion says either you're not guilty and not condemned, or you are guilty and you are condemned. But a Christian, somebody who follows Jesus, you are guilty. You got both those sins happening. You are guilty, but get this, you are not condemned. You're a sinner, but you are utterly accepted. So when Jesus says, neither do I condemn you, imagine what he's feeling when he speaks to this woman. Imagine what's going on inside of him that she doesn't even understand, because he knows what it's going to cost for him to say, neither do I condemn you. In other words, he's saying, my sister, I don't condemn you because I will be condemned for you. Stones will be thrown, but they'll hit me. And spears will be launched, and they'll go through my side. And thorns will be brought down, but they'll go into my skull. And he turns to her and says, you're free. This is, friends, do you see? This is the beauty of the gospel. This is sin, he says. This is wrong. This is not right. It deserves condemnation. But I do not condemn you because I will take your condemnation for you. Wow. That's the story. Well, quickly, some application, some implication of it. The first is this, that love has a sequence. I want you to note the sequence in this story. Jesus does not say, go and sin no more, and then I won't condemn you. You have to see the sequence. Friends, if there's anything that I want you to get as a church family, I want you to lock this into your spiritual DNA. The right order is, neither do I condemn you, and then go and sin no more. No condemnation, you're rescued, now go and live differently. Such a tremendous difference. This is true all the way through Scripture. God rescues the Israelite people, and then he gives them the Ten Commandments. Grace arrives, and then we live as a response to it. We do not live a certain way in order to achieve grace. Grace arrives, neither do I condemn you. And as a response to that, as the second part of the sequence, we go out and we live differently and sin no more, or leave our life of sin, as he says. This makes a huge difference, because if you're struggling today with something that's a habit that's enslaved you, something that's come upon you, and you think to yourself, if I could just get rid of this, if I could just stop doing this, if I could just get this area of my life straightened out, if I just read the Bible, if I just went to church, if I just started giving more regularly, then God would be happy for me and things would work out the way that I want. But God doesn't do it that way, and you will never get over your habits that way, because your only motive, if you do, is fear. The truth is that God gives us grace and acceptance before we overcome the sin. You don't overcome your sin in order to get grace and acceptance. You have to get this. You have to feel this. You have to be blown away by Jesus being able to say, there's no condemnation. And once you understand that, your life will be changed in response. But there's a sequence to love. This means that when you come to Jesus, you don't have to clean up your life first. You don't say, you know, God, I need to get all these things. Sometimes people come to me and they say, I want to be baptized, but I got to do this and I got to do this and I need to understand this. And when I get this done, listen, it's pure grace. There's a sequence to this. There's no condemnation. Now live differently. That's the order. There's a sequence to it. The other thing, though, is that love also has expectations. It expects a response. Grace always expects a response. When you receive it, you will respond. here's the thing. When you hear this word of grace, it will always include a challenge to obey and to grow. He doesn't just say, neither do I condemn you, that's it. Neither do I condemn you, let's just be a place where nobody is condemned, where there's no condemnation, that's it, there's nothing to it. Grace always demands and calls forth a profound response. If you love somebody, you do not want to see them destroyed or walk down a path of a small, tiny life and a small, tiny story. If you love somebody, you don't want to see them destroyed. So grace comes along, and what does it do? It rescues us. Neither are you condemned. But it also intercepts self-destructive behavior. Basically, love comes along and says, there's no condemnation, but get this. I'm going to come into your life, and I'm going to help you to keep from destroying yourself. Maybe that sounds abstract. So imagine if you adopted a child, and the child is just a mess. Like, they're just a mess. They have come from a terrible background, and they're just an absolute mess. And you decide, you and your spouse decide, we're going to adopt this child, bring them into our family. And when you do, it's pure grace. They don't deserve it. They got nothing to offer. You don't adopt them because they're wonderful. In fact, they're lousy. You just adopt them because it's just pure grace. So you bring this little troublemaker into your life and you love him. You put a roof over his head. You give him your resources. You give him your energy and your life. Now what do? When you get them home, do you say to that little child, do whatever you want. I don't care. There's some alcohol over there. There's some drugs there. You don't have to go to school. No. You would never do that. Why? Because if you love someone, you love them out of free grace, that same grace that you've given freely now holds that child's feet to the fire until they become somebody great. Do you see? If somebody says, well, if Jesus loves me so unconditionally, I'm afraid he's going to ask me to do all kinds of crazy things. He's going to ask me to do this and stop doing this. Friends, this is how we love everybody and anybody. Real grace comes in freely, but the grace of God will hold your feet, so to speak, to the fire to make you the great person that God intends you to be. Grace always expects a response. Go, leave your life of sin. And then I guess the last thing I could say is that grace and love, when love walked among us, it was always an invitation. For one, it was an invitation to love others. Here's what's so interesting to me about this story. Jesus says to this woman, neither do I condemn you. And I went through the whole thing about because he's condemned on the cross and all that kind of stuff. But she didn't know that, did it? It hadn't even happened yet. She had no clue the price that he would pay. She did not understand what he was doing in the big picture. She did not understand what he would have to go through in order to say, neither do I condemn you, go and sin no more. Of course she didn't understand. She didn't know. But here's the thing about Jesus. He is constantly loving people who have no idea what he's doing for them. No idea. He loved people who didn't get it. He loved you before you got it, right? So let me invite you to learn from love when love walked among us and look at the people in your life. Maybe you're tempted to give up on somebody or already have because they don't love you back. Because they have no idea what they're putting you through. Maybe you're ready to give up on somebody. Look at Jesus. Ultimately, loving people who don't get it. They don't realize what he's doing for them. They don't realize what it costs him. And if you look at him and he's loving you when you don't get it, you see him, you'll have the strength for people that you're loving who don't get it. And you'll be patient and you'll be courageous. It's an invitation to love, but it's also an invitation, and I'll end here, it's also an invitation for us all to be loved, to come home to love. And maybe today, your secrets and your shame came up in your mind as I was talking, and this whole talk has been kind of bothersome for you.
I know in a room this size and with this much of a group watching online that there are a lot of secrets and shame right here. And I also know that there's a lot of you that have felt the impact of a lot of stones from other people. You've been judged. Maybe it wasn't fairly. You've been judged by yourself, threw some stones at yourself, but you've been judged by other people. But their words have pounded you, and their attitudes have bruised you. And the way that they've treated you has left you staggering. The invitation is to come home. You say, well, what does that look like? Well, for one thing, for those of us with secrets and those of us who have been injured, for one thing, I think it means stop blaming other people. You notice what Jesus does not have time for the victim mentality of this woman at all. He doesn't go there. Yes, she was treated wrongly. Yes, the man should have been there. Yes, she was used. He doesn't bring up any of that. He goes straight to her heart. So my invitation to you is to ask this question. Is there something you've been blaming everyone else for? Stop blaming. And then secondly, look at him. Look at him on the cross. Listen to him and hear him say to you, neither do I condemn you. Other people might. Your self-talk might. But when love walked among us, love did not and love does not today bring condemnation. If there's condemnation, it's not from love. See him. You wonder why we go back to the cross every week? So we can hear it again. Neither do I condemn you. And then come home, not just by owning up and not just by looking up, but then start doing what he asked you to do. When grace comes into your life, it will melt you and it will move you in a certain direction. And that direction may be very challenging at first, but you trust that the same grace that doesn't bring condemnation is the same grace that will shrink all of the tumors of darkness from your life. He will lead you to be your best. Do what he says. Do his bidding. So friends, come. Come to love. Come. He's waiting.